Okay, good morning, everyone. Today, Be'ezras Hashem, we're going to continue our discussion on Bechiras Yisrael and consider the approach of the Kuzari of Rabbi Yehuda Halevi. Recently, I received the following letter, a couple years ago, by now. Dear Kvod HaRabbi, Shalom Uvrach. It was actually a 10-page letter. I'm going to read you just a small snippet. I'm Alberto Bencion Rodriguez. I'm a convert and live in Brazil. Learning together the Sefer HaKuzari, the great work of Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, Zichrono Tzadik V'Kadosh Levracha, and we arrived on a critic point just on the first part of the book. Speaking generally there, the Rabbi Yehuda presents clearly the doctrine of the inherent superiority of the Jew over the non-Jew. And in this rather lengthy letter, Alberto is very much troubled by the Kuzari's seemingly, or what he calls, a racist theory of chosenness. Obviously, it's not our place to rate Rishonim or the like, and the Kuzari is certainly a work which has been very much niskabel by Klal Yisrael, not necessarily every single point. We'll see, for example, a little later on that his position concerning Geirus is probably a minority view among Rishonim, but nevertheless, it's certainly a very important sefer, and it's something that bothers many people in the modern world. I actually saw last night a book, a Hebrew book, who tried to argue that the theory of Bechira presented by the rabbi is not actually the view of Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, that you should read the book in a Platonic sense, and that it's between the king and the rabbi that the true book emerges, sort of like what Strauss did for the Rambam, so this author does for Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, meaning to say the things that he said he didn't really mean, which seems to be quite a stretch, especially in this case, that case also. Anyway, one way or the other, that's what we're going to do today, Be'ezras Hashem, which is try to understand the Mahalach of the Kuzari. Just a brief introduction about Rabbi Yehuda Halevi. Rabbi Yehuda Halevi was born in 1075 in Toledo, Spain. In his youth, he studied under the Rif. He was friends with the Rima Gash, and he later moved to Granada to be close to Rabbi Moshe ibn Ezra. Rabbi Yehuda Halevi studied medicine and practiced medicine. He married and he had one daughter. According to the legend, his daughter married the Rabbi Avram ibn Ezra, the one who wrote the commentary on the Chumash. Besides the Kuzari, Rabbi Yehuda Halevi wrote poetry, including many love poems. Most famous are the ones that express his incredible love and longing for Eretz Yisrael. And in fact, he eventually did move there. There is somewhat of a debate concerning whether he actually reached his final destination. But of course, we all know the legend, which is cited in Shalshelas HaKabbalah, that when he knelt down to kiss the stones of Yerushalayim and proclaimed Tzion Haloti Shali, he was trampled by an Arab horseman and met his death. Rabbi Yehuda Halevi's most famous work, the Kuzari, it's actually, the Kuzari is not the original title, it was written in Arabic, and a translation of the actual title is The Book of Argument and Proof in Defense of the Despised Faith, or Kitab al-Khazari, or something like that. And the book is based upon a story that reached Spain in the 10th century, but took place in the 8th century. The story is that the Khazar people, who live on the shores of the Caspian Seas, a couple hundred years before Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, experienced the following episode, which, in its basic form, a historians know to be true. Essentially, the king of the Khazars received this dream on numerous occasions, in which he was told that your intention is pleasing, but your ways are wrong. So this leads the king of the Khazars to convene a debate. And initially, the Jewish position is not sought. After all, why would anyone wish to consider becoming a Jewish person? They're a despised faith. They're a people without a land, constantly trampled upon and hated. So instead, he first considers and rejects Aristotelian philosophy, Christianity, and Islam. And finally, a Jewish sage, a chaver, is sought. And the reason why the king decides to seek this chaver is because he notes that all the other religions, namely Christianity and Islam, accept the basic premise of Judaism, namely that there was Yetzias Mitzrayim and most importantly Matan Torah. And since the other faiths accept the basic notion of Judaism, let's actually find out what the Jews themselves say. The king is indeed convinced of the correctness of Judaism and converts. That's described at the beginning of book two. It's five books long. And the conversation with the chaver continues for five books until the chaver announces his departure to the Holy Land. So that is the basic sketch of the work. So we're going to jump around a little bit in an attempt to, again, focus on his understanding of Bechiras Yisrael. So Reb Yudah Levi begins the book by noting that the essence of our obligation to serve God is rooted in personal revelation. The Kuzari, Reb Yudah Levi, was not the first to note the remarkable aspect of revelation, that unlike all other religions which are based upon the prophecies of one person or a small group of people, the Torah is based off of an experience of prophecy that the entire nation experienced. And he argues that this is something that you could not possibly make up. Somebody could claim, I'm a prophet. A small group of people could claim, I'm a prophet. We're prophets. But mass revelation, and especially revelation in which it states that you must tell your children and tell your children to tell your children, is not something that could possibly be made up. So the Kuzari writes that this is the basis of our obligation to do mitzvos. Ma she'ani chayav bo, v'chayavim bo kol kahal Yisrael, asher hisbarer etzlam ha-ma'amad ha-hu, bir'os einehem, v'achar kein ha-kabala ha-nimshecha shikimare ha-ayin. So the entire nation that left Egypt saw Matan Torah, and then there is the Kabbalah HaNimsheches, which is equivalent to Mar Sinai. We're on page 8. So the king then asks that if only Jews experienced revelation, then does that mean that only Jews have to serve God? Amar Kuzari, L'fi zeh, ein toraschem mechayeves ki imeschem bilvad. Since you are the only people that experience this revelation. And the chaver answers, Amnam kein, ki mi shenilve aleinu min haumos ki achid yavau min atov asher yetiv imanu ha'eloha, aval shavelo yishvelanu. That's true. Only we are obligated, but there is a possibility for someone to join us. Meaning to say, a non-Jew has the potential to convert, as, again, the king of the Khazars and much of his country eventually does. However, even while someone is still a non-Jew, he can serve God, though it's not equivalent to us. Perhaps he's referring to the Gemara in Kiddushin that Gadol HaMitzuveh Ve'oseh Mishenu Mitzuveh Ve'oseh. Kilu HaYachiyuv HaTorah Mitzad Ma SheHaElohah Bara Es Kulanu Hayu Shavim Ba Kol Bnei Adam. If it were the case that the basis of the obligation of the Torah was the creation of the world, so that's entirely universal, in which case all people would be equally bound to follow the Torah. Kilavan Kishachor Kikulanu Briosav Yisbarach. Ulam chiyav hator aleinu, humitzad mash hotzi anu ha'elokam imitzrayim, humitzad heyos lo hischabrus imanu, beheyos anu skula b'nei adam. However, our obligation to observe the Torah is rooted in Yetzias Mitzrayim and Matan Torah, and he chose to give the Torah to us because we are the Am Segula. He's of course referring to the Psukim that appear many times in the Chumash, for example, Dvarim Perek Zayin, that we are the Segula Mikol Ha'amim. So the king is somewhat offended by the rabbi's claim that the Jews are the choicest of all mankind. Ro'ani Oscha HaYehudi Mishapech B'dvarecha Ki Acharei Asher Kvar Haya Ma'amarcha Na'eh Shavlios Pagum. You've regressed. You started off saying such nice things, and now you're saying Narishkeit. So the rabbi then goes ahead and justifies the distinction, I'm skipping a little bit, based off of a hierarchy within the world. And this basic hierarchy is something that the king agrees to. So within the created world, there are minerals, or inanimate objects, plants, animals, and then the highest level is man. The Chaver asks the king, is there someone higher than man? And the king says, well, a wise man, a chacham. And he says, is that really something that's fundamentally different? Or it's just that he's the same as everybody else, but perhaps he uses the tools that he's been given a little more effectively? And the king says, you're right. Fundamentally, there's only four levels. There's mineral, plant, it's like, you know, vegetable, mineral, or right? So mineral, plant, animal, and man. So the rabbi then asks, so is there anything else then that exists above man? And the king says, no, at least not anyone that's human. And then the rabbi asks the following question. Amar chaver, v'im yimtza ben adam asher yavo be'esh, v'lo tisrefehu, v'yamod zman rav, v'li ma'achal v'lo yirav, uve'ur panav yikarein ur, she'en ha'ayin yicholah la'amod bo, v'lo yachle v'lo yachlash, ad shebehagio l'acharis yamav yamus lirtzono, k'mishya ale al mitaso lishon b'yom yadua v'sha yadua. V'nosaf al kol eile yadat lumos ma shehaya u'ma sheyihye, ha'en madrega zu nivdeles hevdel atzmi mi madregas b'nei adam. Let's say you had a person who could walk in fire and didn't need to eat or drink and never weakened and knew all sorts of mysteries, and even on the day that he died, there was nothing that was missing from him. Would you say that this person, or this thing, this Superman, is distinct from all the other Madregos, the Madrega of all other people? So the king responds, Amnam kein Madrega zu asher im yeshna b'metzius Elohit milachiti. Indeed, if there is such a thing that exists, it's an angelic existence. It's not human. Ve'ena b'chok ha'inyan ha'sichli ha'nafshi o ha'tiv'i, ki'im b'chok ha'inyan ha'eloki. So Amar Chaver, ein elakim achadim mita'arei oso ha'navi asher ein cholek al nevuaso. These are but some of the descriptions of Moshe Rabbeinu. Al yadav nigle l'hamon davar hischaber ha'elokus, Bahem v'noda lahem ki yesh lahem adon hamanhigam gam kirtzono v'chein kefi avodaso uvdam oso o hamrasam bo. Navi zeh hu asher esir pinei halot me'al ha'ever behodio e'chaisa b'riyas ha'olam. So this is Moshe Rabbeinu, and he was the one that told the entire world about Briyas Ha'olam and the like. So essentially what the Kuzari is arguing is that Moshe's level is categorically different than the four preceding levels. Thus, the rabbi has established that there are indeed five levels of existence. The fifth level is the level of the prophet. Now, how does this relate to the question, which is, how are the Jews different from everyone else? The answer is that, as we'll see, Rabbi Yehuda Halevi maintains that only Jews can prophesize. And while it's true that not every Jew fulfills that potential, in fact, of course, most Jews don't end up being prophets, but every Jew has the potential to be a Navi, and they bequeath that potential to their children. And thus, in a sense, what he's getting at is that Jews are a different class of creation. So there's a fifth rung in the hierarchy of creation, and again, what marks the Jew apart is the Inyan Eloki. We'll try to define this as we go along, the divine influence, which allows the Jewish person to experience prophecy. Now, before we go on and define what this Inyan Eloki is, it's worthwhile to pause and ask a basic question which troubles any modern reader of the Kuzari, which is, what does this mean for us in the post-prophetic world? And the truth is, even in the prophetic world, most people did not merit to experience prophecy. So, to what extent is a Jew who doesn't experience prophecy different than a non-Jew? Also, we have to consider what the spiritual potential of a non-Jew. What does God expect of him? So, the Kuzari has told us that the chief expression of the Inyan Eloki is prophecy. The Kuzari maintains that non-Jews, as well as converts, cannot experience prophecy. We'll see shortly that both of those points are debated. There are those Rishonim who say non-Jews can experience prophecy. Proof for that is brought, among other things, from Bilam. And certainly, there are many who contend that converts, Kikat and Shinoladam, mean that they are no different from a Jew. But the position of the Kuzari is that the potential to experience prophecy is dependent upon the inheritance of the Inyan Eloki, something that you can inherit from your parents, and therefore if your parents didn't have it because they weren't Jewish, then you could not have it. So what emerges then is that the primary difference between Jew and non-Jew, according to the Kuzari, has not existed, at least in a practical sense, for over 2,000 years. So we have to consider what is the contemporary relevance of Inyan Eloki. And what emerges is two possibilities. The first possibility is that Nevuah should be seen as an expression of a broader phenomenon relating to God in general, in a spiritual sense, and accordingly the Inyan Eloki remains significant even in the post-prophetic world, because we continue to be able to relate to God in this spiritual, emotional sense, and even though we don't necessarily achieve the epitome of this potential, in the sense that we don't prophesy, but nevertheless, we have experienced some element of it. That's possibility one. Again, possibility one, Nevuah is an expression of a broader phenomenon. Possibility two is that Rabbi Yehuda Halevi's focus on prophecy should be understood simply and narrowly, in which case it has no longer any practical relevance in the post-prophetic world. So those are the two tzadim in this chakira. What's the pshat of the Inyan Eloki, and to what extent is it relevant bizman hazeh? So on the one hand, Rabbi Yehuda Halevi stresses Nevuah almost to the exclusion of all other phenomena, which supports the second tzad. On the other hand, prophecy had long since vanished when the Kuzari was written, and it seems unlikely that Rabbi Yehuda Halevi thought that the whole Inyan Eloki was no longer relevant. So that would support the first option. However, we can rebuff that proof by noting the following. Rabbi Yehuda Halevi's description of the Jew in exile is akin to someone who's dead. Rabbi Yehuda Halevi compares us in the Galus to the dried out bones of Yechezkel. He, by the way, is not the only one to do this. Ramban in Parshas Vayechi, in describing the Maisa Avo Simin Labanim of Parshas Vayechi, writes that Yaakov and his family going down to Egypt is equivalent to the Galus that we are in today, Galus Edom. And the redemption of what's the Maisa Avo Simin Labanim for the Geula of Galus Edom, that which we hope for shortly, that's not when the Jews left Egypt, that's no longer in the Parsha of Maisa Avo Simin Labanim, right? Maisa Avo Simin Labanim is on the Avos, and it's in Sefer Bereishis. It's when Yaakov is returned from Mitzrayim, dead. Ramban writes that where's the Maisa Avo Simin Labanim of the Geula Hasida? Yaakov Avinu being returned dead. And he notes seven parallels between the description of the Geula, the coming of Mashiach, and the return of Yaakov. For example, the fact that Yaakov is returned to Eretz Yisrael with great pomp and ceremony and the like. And we will be returned with the aid of the non-Jews to Eretz Yisrael with great pomp and ceremony. He notes numerous parallels. But for our purposes, what's so important to note is that essentially we die in Galus, just like Yaakov died in Galus. It's true, Yaakov Avinu lo meis, but essentially that's what it is. And he says that is the understanding of the prophecy in Yechezkel of the dry bones, where the bones die, and that reflects our death in Galus. And the Geula is depicted by the Tchias HaMesim. I think my cousin mentioned this when he was here in the writings of Rav Kook. He noted that Rav Kook also assumed that was the understanding of the prophecy of Yechezkel and the Gaon also. But it was assumed also by the Ramban and the Kuzari over here. So let's take a look. This is again how the Rabbi Yehuda Levi depicts our predicament in Galus. Amar Achaver, Emes hu, Sheshoresh HaChachma Mufkad Ba'aron, Asher hu B'madrega Salev. A human being has a head and a heart. And as a nation, we have a head and a heart. Our head, the Shoresh, was kept in the Aron, Asher hu B'madrega Salev. V'hu, Vehem aseres advarim v'toldoseim v'hi haTorah mitzido. Kemo she'amar v'samtem oso mitzad aron bris Hashem. U'misham tetzaena shtei hachachmos. Chachmas haTorah v'noseha hakohanim. So there were two aspects of chachma in Klal Yisrael, both of which emerged from the Aron. Number one is chachmas haTorah, and those who supported it, which are the Kohanim, Sifsei Kohen Yishmer Udas. The Kohanim were those that carried the Chachma of Torah. And also, the second one was Chachmas HaNevua V'Noseha HaNeviim. V'hem hayu kimo hayoatzim hamakirim hamazhirim ha'uma v'umazkirim v'kosvim v'hem rosh ha'uma. So, the Jewish people had a head and a heart. The head were the Kohanim, the heart were the Nevi'im. Both of them emerged from the Aron and the Mikdash and the like. So the king says, Im Kain, Atem Hayom, Guf below Rosh, below Lev. If that's true, we don't have the Aron anymore, we don't have Kohanim anymore, at least Kohanim doing the Avoda, we don't have Nevi'im anymore, so you are like a body without a head and without a heart. The Kuzari says, "En achanami, kein hu kasher amarta, v'od v'lo guf." It's worse than you said. Not only don't we have a head and a heart, we don't even have a body. What are we? Aval atzamos mifuzaros kemo haatzamos hayiveshos asher ra'a Yechezkel. V'im kol zeh melech Kuzar. Elu ha'atzamos asher nishar bahem teva mitiv'ei hachayim v'kfar hayu kelim l'rosh v'lalev v'ruach v'nefesh v'seichel tovim m'gufos hamitsuyaros me'aven vasid b'rosh v'einayim v'oznayim v'chol ha'ivarim v'lo chala b'hem me'olam ruach haya v'yavsha sh'yachul b'hem achema tzuros domos l'tzuros adam v'einam adam. It's true. We have neither a head, nor a body, nor a heart. We're like dried out bones. But at least, we're like dried out bones that once lived. And in that sense, we're better than others who never even lived. It's true, they might have a face with organs and the like, but they're like a plaster statue that never did live and never can live. So perhaps, going back to our chakira, the second option is indeed correct. There is little left of our uniqueness besides our glorious past, the fact that we once lived. And that's because, perhaps, the second sadhana chakira is correct. Without prophecy, then we have nothing. However, it's not so simple. The king notes that this pedigree is what allowed us to maintain our distinction throughout the bitter exile. He writes, Amar Kuzari, Kein hu ki lo ya'ale b'machshava she'uma min ha'umos yikare begalus kazos shelo tishtena l'uma acheres. It's absolutely remarkable that the Jewish people throughout the galus remained a intact and distinct nation. Kol shekein im orach hazman hazeh. V'kama umos avdu shechayu achareichem lo nishar lahem zecher. So many nations that lived after you, that rose after you, have already long since vanished. Mehem Edom u'Moav u'Bnei Amon v'Aram u'Pileshes v'Kazdim u'Madai u'Paras v'Habramim v'Hatzabim. Look at all these nations, they're long gone. And moreover, besides our past, we also have a future. So where does this leave us now? Are we more than dry bones pining for redemption? Is there something of our distinction that remains? So here, the rabbi says yes. There is another aspect to our singularity besides prophecy, and that is Shmiras HaMitzvos. Amar HaChaver, Ve'al tachshov ki ma she'siaticha bedvarecha hoda'a mimenu shanachnu kemo adavar meis. Don't think that I entirely agreed to that which you said. Aval yesh lanu hischabros b'inyan ahu ha'eloki v'toros asher shemam bris b'ineinu uveno. Kemila shenem arba v'hayisa v'risibiv sarchem lebris olam v'ashabas shenem arba ki oshi b'ini uveinechem l'doroseichem. We continue to have mitzvos. We continue to have a bris that allows us connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu even in the post-prophetic world. So, not all is lost. And we continue to maintain a unique connection with the Ribono Shel Olam through Shmiras HaMitzvos. Later on in the Sefer, the Rabbi Yehuda Halevi returns to this theme. There are those, by the way, scholars who think that Rabbi Yehuda Halevi changed his mind in the later books, and there's actually a stira between what he says here, which is from the end, and what he says at the beginning. And again, I don't think there's any basis for that. And moreover, from the paragraph we just read, which was from the beginning, you already see that this idea already existed. So this is in a very long section of the Kuzari, again, where he discusses the importance of mitzvos. Hakdama harevias, this is the fourth introduction to understanding the importance of observing Torah. Hahoda ki yesh b'metzius madregos elyonos v'tachtonos. Hanimtza sheyesh lo hakara tfisa v'techushav hu lemala min hanimtza she'en lo kolela kiu karov yoser l'siba rishona shehi hasechel be'atzem. So there are different existing beings that are of a higher and lower degree. So everything that possesses feeling and perception is higher than those creatures which lack feeling and perception, since the former are nearer to the prime cause, who himself is intellect, right? Karov yoser l'siba rishona, the prime cause, meaning to say HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is the cause for everything else that exists, which is the Seichel Be'etzem, like we saw in the Rambam. Tha'pachos shebitz. It's now's not the time to get into it, but Reb Yehuda Levi is known as someone who's an anti-rationalist and against philosophy and the like. As you see from here and elsewhere in the Kuzari, that's somewhat of an oversimplification. Tha'pachos shebitz machim. Madrigaso lemala min hachashuv she be machtzavim. So the lowest plant is of a higher rank than the highest mineral. Vapachosha be behemos he lemala be madrega min haelyon she betzmachim. And the lowest animal is of a higher madrega than the highest plant. Vapachos mi bibne adam naale min haelyonim she bebali achayim. And the lowest man is higher than the highest animal. All this is because, again, the lowest man is closer to the source of God. Essentially, the Kuzari explains that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the universe in which there are sometimes direct causes for things and sometimes indirect. In other words, sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu does A, which causes B, which causes C, which causes D, which causes E to happen. So E then is much further than something which is more direct. And along those lines, a human being is much closer to the Ribono Shel Olam than an animal. Uvedome leze hapachos bivne adam mekayme hamitzvos haeloka yisborach madregaso lemala mizu shel halyona b'mechusarei mitzvos. Note here how he's focusing on mitzvos. So the highest, the lowest mitzvah observer is going to be on a higher madrega than the highest non-mitzvah observer, because through mitzvos he is closer to the Ribono Shel Olam. Ki a mitzvah haba me'es haloka maknel l'nefashos hisnahagus malachim utchunosam, because the observance of mitzvos causes those who observe mitzvos to obtain a angelic or spiritual aspect. The davar zeh ein lasigo b'shum derech kinyan acheres. There is no other way to achieve this higher spiritual state. You could study all the philosophy you want, but what you become when you observe mitzvos is something fundamentally different. Raya ledavar hahasmada al maaseh Hamitzvos hazos mevia el dargas hanivuah. Proof to this, back to nivuah, is that observance of mitzvos constantly brings a person to the madrega of nivuah. Whereas you could study all the philosophy you want, you'll never achieve that level. Shehi hakrova shebemadregos enosh el hamaala haelokis. Baal hamitzvos hachote hu efo tov mi mechusar hamitzvah. Ki ha-mitzvah ha-elokis kvar hiknesa lo hisnahagus malachis ba yisromim el madrega malachim. So therefore, when a person observes mitzvos, he already reaches this level of madregos and becomes closer to God and the like. So here too, we see the rabbi referring to the five levels of existence. Again, minerals, plants, animals, humans, and also a fifth level. But here, when describing the fifth level, though he mentions prophecy, he also mentions mitzvos and how mitzvos could bring a person to prophecy. Here he doesn't stress the inyan eloki, and that's because in the first section he's discussing the potential for prophecy, and here he's explaining how that potential is actualized, and the answer is through continuous performance of mitzvos. So here we see again that there is indeed significance to the Inyan Eloki through Shmiras HaMitzvos in a way that is still relevant even Bizman Hazeh, even in the post-prophetic world. Rabbi Yehuda Halevi further notes that there is a possibility of connecting to God even without prophecy when he discusses the Avoda of a Ger. Umisha davak b'derech hazeh, meaning to say someone who becomes a convert, will have a large portion of closeness to God. There is still a difference between the convert and the citizen, the person born Jew, Jewish. So, a ger is able to achieve chasidus and chachma. He could be among the chachamim and the chasidim, however, not a navi. So, again, we see that even if a ger is capable of achieving chasidus and chachma, so be'etzim, that madrega is shayach to us even in the post-prophetic world. Nevertheless, as we saw before, our connection to the Ribbono Shel Olam, Bizman Hazeh, especially in the post-prophetic world, is severely weakened. We are but a shadow of our former glory. The Chavir notes that while we are not quite on the level of a corpse, as he said earlier, we are like a sick man who is wasting away, upon whom the doctor has given up all hope that they will ever survive. In Gullus, we're like someone in the ICU. Doctor tells the family, you know, you should get ready for the end. And thus the Pasuk says, can these bones live? In Yechezkel, Lamed Zayin, Pasuk Gimel. And he compares us to the in Gullus to the horrible image of the suffering servant in the book of Yeshayahu. Those of you who studied the book of Yeshayahu, chapters Nun Beis and Nun Gimel, are aware of one of the most fascinating nevuos, in which the suffering servant is described. He's horrific looking. Everyone who sees him is disgusted. Perhaps, if there's time today, or if not next time, we'll consider various interpretations of who exactly the suffering servant is. This is the famous chapter of Hine Yaskil Avdi. It's actually the chapter that is most commonly used in anti-Jewish polemics. Still continues to be used, misused, indeed. So maybe we'll have a chance to talk about it. But the Rabbi Yehuda Halevi presumes, like actually most Rishonim, that it's a reference to the Jewish people in Galus, a collective interpretation. And it's describing the Jews in Galus. So this is who we are. V'ein anachnu b'malas hames. So we're not quite dead. Ach anachnu b'malas hachola hanishchaf sheyisyashu mirefuaso kol harofim. V'hu mikaveh refua mitzad hamofes v'shinui haminag. Kimo she'amar kasuv hatechyena hatzamos ha'ela. Ukimashal ha'ma'amar behine yaskil avdi. Min lo to'arhu v'lo hadar ukimisaser panim imenu nivzev v'lo chashavnuhu. Ratza lomar shehu mishanui hanir'eh v'roa mar'ehu. Kimo hadvarim hamitunafim sheyesh la'adam istenisus lahabit aleihem. Umastir panav mehem, nivze v'chadal ishim, ish michovos yodua v'choli. Somebody who's so deformed that when people look at him, they have to look away. They're grossed out. off. So, Lemaskana, going back to the Chakira we raised, what is the what's left of our Inyan Eloki, of our special status in our current existence? So I think the answer is that it's somewhere in between the two options that we mentioned. On the one hand, in Galus, we do continue to connect to the Ribono Shel Olam with mitzvos. The uniqueness of our stature is not totally obsolete. Nevertheless, we are but a former of a shadow of our former glory, and we're longing for the days when our latent potential, which we still have, can once again be fulfilled through prophecy. So with this, oh my goodness, we're late. We could turn to the basic question, is which is, why is it, the issue we discussed last week, that the Jewish people merited revelation and merited this special status? So, again, we've seen what makes the Jewish people essentially different from the rest of humanity, and that's the Inyan Eloki, the ability to prophesy. Why are we unique? So here we have to go back to the beginning of time. Adam HaRishon zachar l'sgula zu ki haya shalem b'chol b'lo yotzei min haklal ki ma pegam efshar limso b'shleimus yitzir asher yetzei mitachas yad uman gadol chachma v'chol yachol. So Adam HaRishon, which is the Yetzir Kapav of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, was obviously perfect in every conceivable way. And that's because there was nothing to cause any chesronos in Adam HaRishon. Whereas, when it comes to other humans, there are all sorts of factors, I'm going to say a little bit outside, that can cause a person to not turn out to be so good. For example, climate, or if we use the metaphor, which Reb Yehuda Levi uses, it's to that of a seed. So you could have a perfect seed. I'll give you a couple years ago, under Mike Bloomberg, so they decided to improve all the trees in New York. And if you notice, in a couple years ago, they replaced all the trees throughout the streets in Washington Heights with new trees. So they decided that they want these trees to be the best trees in the world. So they went, they found the tallest trees in America that showed to be the oldest and the strongest, and they went up with helicopters and took their seeds from the very top. So these are going to be the most hardy and the most strong trees. And then they were going to say, ah, now we have the perfect seeds, so let's plant them throughout New York. So if you look outside the window, you'll see a number of dead trees along 186th Street. So what happened? The best seeds in the world. They spent so much money. And if you saw, they were planted so carefully and so nicely. The answer is that you might have the best genes in the world, but when placed in a lousy environment, may not get into details, so success might not be reached. And essentially says that's the same thing. So a person, Adam HaRishon, had this Inyan Eloki. He was a prophet. And he bequeathed it to some of his children. But that doesn't mean that just because they inherited this potential, just because they had good genes, that they were going to turn out to be so good. Because there are all sorts of other factors that might limit their growth. So, Shais, who was Adam's son, inherited this exceptional faculty in terms of Inyan Eloki. And in subsequent generations, there were special individuals, including Enosh, Noach, Shem, who possessed this capacity. Sometimes it remained latent, and sometimes it was expressed. Avram Avinu, of course, was a descendant of Aver, who received this Inyan Eloki from Aver, and it was actualized within him. He achieved Nevuah. But even within Avram Avinu, not all of his children followed in his path, and the Inyan Eloki only passed on to Yitzchak, and from there to Yaakov. However, things changed at the time of Yaakov Avinu. And what happened was that all of Yaakov Avinu's children were worthy and deserving and expressed this Inyan Eloki. So let's read inside a little, I guess. The kachaya davar, I'm skipping a little, gam bedoros asher minoach ad Avraham. Amnam haya bahem misha lo davak bo ha'inyan ha'loki. So there were those for whom the inyan ha'loki did not cling to them. Kach l'mashal terach. Ulam, Avram b'no haya talmid l'avi aviv le'ever. Gdola mizos, hu yikir gam es noach. Ki ha'inyan ha'loki nimshach etzla me'avos Avos el bnei vanim. So it essentially passed from Noach to Shem to Aver to Avram. Kach haya Avram skulas Aver v'talmido. Valkein nikra Ivri. Why is Avram Avinu called Avram ha'Ivri? Because he was a Talmud of Aver. V'Aver haya skulas Shem, shaya skulas Noach, shekein naflu lo b'Yerusha Aratzos ha'aklimim hanochim. We talked about environmental factors. Sheb emtsa isa nimtsa eretz chemda eretz kenan. He eretz hanevua. Ach yefes yatsa v'chulei v'chulei. Fine. V'skulas Avram mibein banav haya Yitzchak. V'lachen shalach Avram es kol banav ha'achirim min ha'aretz ha'miuchedes ha'hi. Eretz kenan. Eretz kenan is the land for nevua. So accordingly, Avram Avinu sent away all his other children from Eretz Canaan. V'osa yichid liYitzchak v'skulas Yitzchak haYaakov v'lachein hurchak Esav achiv min haaretz ahi ki Yaakov levado nimtza ra'ui la. So again, Rabbi Yehuda Levi continues using the genetic analogy. He notes, for example, that just like if we observe hereditary patterns, not every child looks like their parent. And sometimes you'll have a situation where a grandchild will look like a grandfather. It seems like the genes skipped a generation. So too with the Inyan Ha'aloki. So as we said, everything changed with Yaakov. Now again, this doesn't mean to say that every Jew, every descendant of Yaakov is perfect. But what changed is that every descendant of Yaakov now has the ability to bequeath this Inyan Eloki to their children, such that their children now have that latent potential for prophecy. Ulam, Bnei Yaakov hayu kulam sgula, kulam yachad ri'uyim li'inyan ha'aloki. V'lachein haya lahem ha'makom ahu ha'miyuchad b'hizgalus ha'inyan ha'aloki l'nachala. That's why they inherited Eretz Canaan. Me'osa she'al sha'ah hischil ha'inyan ha'aloki. Shad heina lochal kiyim al yechidim. So until now, the Inyan Eloki was just chal on individuals, and now it was shochein bekarev kibbutz. V'haloka hishgiach al bnei Yaakov gam biyosem b'mitzrayim lahafrosam ulaharbosam ulagadel es bneihem kasher yigdal ish es ha'ilan shesharsho tov ad hotziu pri Bashel b'domeh l'pri arishon shemimenu nita noteh ha'ilan. Ritzoni lomar, da'ag l'gadlam ad asher yidmu lavosam. That's why, by the way, in the prophet, so frequently, we have the metaphor of HaKadosh Baruch Hu raising us up like plants and taking good care to make us make sure we're healthy. V'apri ha'bashel ba b'moshe, Aaron u'Miriam, and these perfect ripened fruits then express themselves in Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam, Bezalel, Aliyav, the Nisim, Shivim Zakenim, all of whom were Ruai Lenevua, like Hoshea, Kalev, Chor, and the like. Pesahin Nimtsu B'nei Yisrael, Ve'uyim Laharos Ha'or Ha'loki, b'tocham lizgalos bashgachas aloka aleihem. Amnam, hayu b'neihem gam chotim, sinuei aloka, aval ein safik shegam hem hayu sgula mibchina yudua, sharei mitzad shorsham v'tivam haya bahem min hasgula v'atidim hayu laolid banim sheyiyu sgula. Rabbi Yehuda Levi, and you see this in the fifth book at length, very much believes in Bechira Chafshis, and the fact that every human and every Jew could choose good or bad. Thus, the fact that every Jew inherits this Inyan Eloki, this potential, doesn't mean that they're going to express it. Whether a Jew expresses that, becomes a good person or does not, is entirely in their own control, and they're absolutely free in that respect. Kach yesh lizaher ba'av hachotei, Shekein hu anosei as zera hasgula asher bizdakekot hisgale bivno o biven bino. However, even this Jew who chooses to sin will bequeath this potential for greatness, for nevuah, to their child, such that you could have a situation where you'll have a tzaddik ben rasha. So, essentially, before Yaakov, certain factors, things like education, climate, free will, prevented the Inyan Eloki from being passed down to subsequent generations. And that changed with Yaakov. So the question is, why did this happen? Why is it that the Bnei Yaakov and subsequently everybody inherited the Inyan Eloki? And that didn't happen until then. And essentially, Rabbi Yehuda Levi's answer is Hashkacha. We'll read V'chein Bivris Avas Olam Mechuvan Achasid Ki Ha'inyan Ha'eloki Davek Be'eda Hamuchenes Lekablo Ki Hidabek Ha'or B'mareh Hazaka V'chi HaTorah Nitna Lanu Me'es Ha'loka Be'alos Ratzon Lefanav. So, to a certain degree, he's not answering, like we'll see the Rambam in the next year say, why did this happen? Alos ratzon lefanav. We can't fully understand it, but so HaKadosh Baruch Hu decreed. Ki tigle malchuso ba'aretz, kishem shehi nigleis bashamayim. V'chi achachma lokis chiva, ki yivra haloka ba'aretz lo malachim, ki im bnei adam mizer v'adam, she is nagshu bahem kolchos teva shonim, v'titnatschena v'tocham midos shonos, lefi Hatmuros asher ba'aliyas hamazalos ubiridasam. Ach, behayos b'nei adam yechidim otziru or ba'alei mezek zach, yachol aleihem ha'or ha'eloki, v'tavo ha'ashkacha ha'elokis aleihem b'darkam nifla'im umuflaim hayotzim min haklal shel seder ha'olam ha'tivi. An expression of the Inyan Eloki, the Kuzari is saying, is also a much higher degree of hashkacha and providence. V'davar zeh me'eis ha'loka anu mechanim b'shem ahava v'simcha v'hine ha'inyan ha'loki lo matza lo achareh me'oros v'galgalim mekablim osei dvaro v'dveikim b'seder asher nitztavu alav ki im ben chasidei b'nei adam v'ilu hayu mu'atim l'min adam v'ad Yaakov v'rak achareh Yaakov hayu ha'yechidim l'kahal. Okay. Feel bad. The Kuzari, the king asks, why is there a need for this hierarchy? Why can't we just have a situation where everybody is equal potential to achieve God, Jew and non-Jew, right? Umadua lo nitna Torah kehaishara l'chol b'nei adam. The Torah would be given to everybody. V'chi lo hayazer ra'u yoser l'chachma ha'elokis. Wouldn't it be more fitting with divine wisdom for everybody in the world to have this potential? So the Kuzari responds, the rabbi responds, V'chi lo haya ra'u yoser ki yu kol ba'alei ha'chayim medabrim? Why didn't God create a world where every animal speaks? After all, give all living things the same potential. Why should there be a difference between animals and humans? The type of question doesn't make so much sense. We need a hierarchy, a division is necessary. Now, he doesn't fully answer the question. he alludes to a hierarchy in history, and it's very similar to an answer we'll see next year, Be'ezras Hashem, from the Rambam, who basically says that it's not intelligent to ask, why did God create the world this way and not that way? He writes here, Asher lishinuyan hadvarim eno ba ki im mishone achomer shebahem en chayachol efol omar madua lo asani haloka malach. Just like it's foolish to ask, why didn't God make me an angel? Kshem she'ena to'elas yicholah lomar madua lo asani adam. Likewise, it doesn't make sense for a worm to ask, why didn't he make me a person? So it doesn't make sense for a non-Jew to ask, why didn't he make me a Jew? Ha'uda ki yesh b'metzius madrigos elyonos v'tachtonos. So there are, like we said before, existences that are of a higher and lower degree, each one which has its purpose, and each one which is necessary with respect to the broader purpose of the creation of the world. So the universe requires different creatures to perform different tasks, and just like an ant shouldn't complain, why am I not a monkey, and a human, even a Jew, shouldn't complain, why am I not an angel, it doesn't make sense to ask, why am I not something else? What you see from here, and another idea that the Kuzari stresses on multiple places, is that it's non-Jews also play an important role in the world. In fact, the Kuzari later on compares all humans to a human, with the Jewish people being the heart and other nations being other limbs, like the hands and the feet and the like. Hands and feet play a very important function, a very important role. We wouldn't be able to do much of that which we do if we lacked those organs. So, essentially then, what Rabbi Yehuda Halevi is saying is that non-Jews can indeed, do indeed play a role in the world. Later on, and earlier on we saw, that they too can understand God, they could become chachamim, in a sense he even sounds like they could become chasidim. They just can't become nevi'im. Nevi'im is, nevuah is a role which only the Jew could possess. And as we mentioned, only someone born Jewish. So I guess we have to stop here. Be'ezras Hashem, next year we will talk about Kuzari's position on conversion. As I mentioned, we're spending a lot of time on Kuzari, A, because among the Rishonim he's the one who addresses this most fully, B, because everybody talks about the Kuzari on this topic, and it's important to know what he actually says. We don't have Shir next week, so I want to wish you all a Chag Kashrut Sameach if I don't see you. I'm sure I'll see you. And a good Shabbos, and thank you very much. So next year is
Friday after Pesach.
Friday after Pesach. There you go.
I'm even flying to Moses. I'm doing this later.